Well, we just read a very long gospel passage. But I'm wondering how many people can tell me, and this is not a class, so you don't have to do like in some of the youth masses where the people are like, ooh, ooh, okay. I wonder how many people could tell me if I were to ask you, what is the turning point in the gospel? Because there's one point in the gospel where everything changes. I'll bet you don't know, do you? Okay. I'm going to kind of reduce the gospel down, the homily down, because I do just want to focus on a couple of things, because in and of itself, that's already enough to preach a lot. The turning point in the gospel comes down to the point where Jesus, he's already gone through the niceties of talking to this woman. He says, go get your husband. And she says, I don't have a husband. And Jesus kind of drops the hammer on her. He says, you are correct in saying you don't have a husband. You have had five. And the man you're living with is not your husband. Okay, there's a whole background and baggage to that. First of all, the very beginning, it's worth pointing out, Jesus is there in the middle of the day. If you're in the middle of the day in the Holy Land, I don't know what time of year it was, but usually most of the year at midday, it's super hot. It's going to be 100 degrees out. It's like a desert, right? You're going to be in Samaria. And most people, in fact, basically nobody in Samaria goes in the middle of the day when it's hot out to draw water. Why? Because it's hot. So why would this woman be going at 12 or 1 in the afternoon to draw water? Precisely because she doesn't want to have to deal with all the other ladies in the town. Why? Because she's lived with five different men, and now the one she's living with, number six, is not her husband. And she doesn't want to have to deal with it. So she's obviously on purpose avoiding being around everybody else. And you can imagine what's going through her mind. She comes walking up to the well. It's like, oh, good grief. Now there's some dude there. And then furthermore, she finds out that he's not even Samaritan, he's Jewish, and she's not supposed to be talking to him. And he starts talking to her, and she's like, what is going on here? First of all, in the Middle Eastern society back then, men and women didn't just casually talk. Obviously, find ways to communicate, but it was usually, if you didn't know this person, then it was going to be in some sort of social setting that you would get introduced. You didn't just randomly come up to somebody and say, hey there. Because it would be seen as you're hitting on this person and would not be well appreciated. Okay? So Jesus is already, the simple fact that he's a stranger and he's there talking to her, he's breaking protocol. Then secondly, she hears his Jewish accent and she's really like, what are you doing? We're not even supposed to be talking to each other. We're supposed to be enemies. Okay, so this is in the background again. But nonetheless, Jesus begins his conversation with her, and she kind of gets sucked into it until Jesus gets her to admit something. He gets her to be vulnerable. Jesus says, go call your husband. She says, I don't have one. And Jesus reveals to her something. And what he reveals changes her life. What he reveals is, I know you. I know you to the depths. I know you better than you know yourself. I know who you are meant to be, and I know the masks that you're wearing. And by his manner, he also communicated to her, I know you and I accept you. You are loved. I am not a threat to you. All the other people who knew about her that she was trying to avoid, because they weren't coming at her from a good place. They were criticizing and ridiculing. But Christ, when he says, call your husband, and she says, I don't, and he says, you're right. You had five, and the man you're living with now, number six, is not your husband. Something about his manner was communicating, I know everything about you, and nonetheless, I'm not here to judge you and condemn you. And this is the turning point in the whole gospel. And I think so often for us, that is what our hearts are yearning for. Christ knows each of us infinitely better than we know ourselves. And Christ looks at you with all of your baggage and your insecurities and those sinful habits that it feels like you just can't break, and your shame and whatever else you want to throw in there, and he says, I know you. And nonetheless, you are welcome. Because I want to bring you out of yourself, and I want to help you to become who you were meant to be from the beginning. This is kind of the subtext of Jesus' conversation with this woman. She doesn't run away and say, who do you think you are, or anything. She realizes this is a man of God. And he opens her up in a very loving way. Now, let's go back to the marriage theme, because to me, the theme of marriage is actually central to this whole gospel. When he says, you have had five husbands and the one you have now is not your husband, the gospel scholars make reference to the fact that this woman, this is the Gospel of St. John, by the way, and St. John is always super symbolic. So whenever he tells a story like this, there's always layers of symbols. This woman is symbolic for the entire people of Samaria. Because who are the people of Samaria? Okay, you remember in the times of the 12 tribes of Israel, right? And then King Saul united them, and he wasn't that good. So then King David took over, and he was good for the most part. He had a couple big mess ups, but overall he was very good. And then David's son Solomon started off really good and ended really bad. And as a punishment, the 12 tribes of Israel were split. 10 tribes became the northern kingdom, whose capital was in Samaria, and 2 tribes, which was Judah and Benjamin, remained around Jerusalem. So you had the split kingdom. And actually, when you read the prophets, part of the trick about reading the prophets is you have to figure out where are they preaching, because some of them are preaching in the north, Samaria and all those tribes, some of them are preaching in Israel, or in Jerusalem down below, in Judah. And you got to figure out who are they talking to, what are they talking about, okay? So after the kingdom was split, because they had a whole succession, both kingdoms had a whole succession of bad kings, but especially the kingdom of Israel, which was the one whose capital was in Samaria, they got conquered by the Assyrians. And the Assyrians took the Jewish people and because Assyria was kind of an empire in its own right. They spread them all over the place. And then they brought in 5 different nations of people with different religions, different cultures, different languages. And they planted them in the northern kingdom of Israel, whose capital was in Samaria. So you've got 5 different nationalities. It's kind of like living in Queens, okay? You've got all these nationalities all speaking different languages with different religions, okay? But for Jewish people, that was a real problem because they're a theocracy. They're united by one people, one God, one language, one race, all that. Okay, so that's the context. That's why Samaritans and Jews didn't talk to each other, because then the Samaritans, they had their kings and they set up this false temple with this false religion, and then they got mixed in with all these other races, and they were half-breeds, and they're like, you guys aren't even Jewish anymore. I don't know what you are, but you're just mutts. That's the way the Jewish people looked at the Samaritans. So when Jesus shows up, and here's this Jewish guy talking, it's like, okay, there's already bad blood. So the woman is representing the kingdom of the people of Samaria. They've had 5 different husbands, 5 different nationalities come in, and that is not their identity. And the one that they have right now, Rome, is still not their husband. And Jesus is representing God coming back to the people of Samaria and saying, I have not forgotten you. The husband to whom you were married in the beginning. It's like one of those stories. It's kind of like the Odyssey. By the way, they're making a new movie, The Odyssey. It's one of the most famous stories in history, written by Homer, right? Matt Damon is playing Odysseus. Looks like it's going to be quite good when it comes out. But the story of the Odyssey, for all that, okay, they fight monsters and everything, but underlying the story of the Odyssey is this beautiful story. This Odysseus goes off to war in Troy. And the war in Troy lasts for 10 years, and finally the Trojan horse and the whole nine yards, they overthrow Troy. And then on the way home, Odysseus and his men get overtaken by all kinds of trials and tribulations, and Odysseus takes another 10 years to get home. And the entire 20-year period, his wife has been holding out because she says, I am married and my husband is out there somewhere. And Odysseus, for 20 years, the only thing he wants is to get home and to be with his wife. And there's this climactic scene at the end, because she's got, because basically she's rich and very influential, she's got a house full of dudes, they're called suitors, but dudes that are trying, they want to marry her, they're trying to get to be the one, and all these unwanted people in her house constantly, day in and day out, every single day for years, and she can't get rid of them, and they're harassing her and eating up all of her food and eating up all of her income and everything. And one day, Odysseus comes home, and he's dressed up like a beggar, the same way that Jesus, who comes to earth, comes like a poor man. And Odysseus creates a plot, and he kills all of these suitors that have been harassing his wife. He kills them all. The same way that we could say Christ comes, and he destroys all the demons that have harassed the world. He destroys the kingdom of Satan in the crucifixion, death, and resurrection. But his wife still isn't sure it's really him. And how does she know that it's him? She places a test on him. She tells her maids, oh good, my husband Odysseus is back. Go move the bed back into the bedchamber. And Odysseus freaks out. What have you done? Because he knew something that only he and she and one other person knew. Their bed was rooted to the ground. It was actually incorporated into this olive tree. And it's a symbol for the fact that their marriage was firm and immovable. Nothing was going to break it. Okay? And when Odysseus hears, what happened? What have you done to our bed? It's a symbol like your marriage is destroyed and everything. He freaks out. And then she knows he's the one. So why am I going into all this? Because when Penelope understood, this man knows me, and I know him, then she knew, this is my true spouse. When the people of Samaria, represented by this woman, understood, this man knows me, and when he speaks, it resonates, and I know that this is the one, this is my God speaking to me. It resonates. And the people of Samaria recognized all those other religions and everything we played around with. That was all wrong. This is the one. And the same thing is true of each one of us on an individual level. Christ knows us. And when we enter into that dialogue with him through real, authentic prayer, through radical sincerity of life and real, authentic prayer, when we let Christ speak to us, especially by going to confession, by the way, so I love seeing the confession line back there. When we let Christ speak to us and reveal, you are known with all your flaws, and you are loved, and I'm calling you back. That's really so much of what Lent is about in the end of the day. So, in the end, this gospel, I actually had a title for it, and I forgot to mention it. It is Identity and Desire. Christ reveals this woman's identity to her, and Christ reveals the desire that he has as God for our hearts. And when identity and desire meet, that's when conversion takes place. The Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.